thank you for tuning in to the fifth day of the second week of IGH 260, a five-year-long study of the New Testament brought to you by International Gospel Hour. We are working our way through each of the 260 chapters in the New Testament, studying one chapter each week. Today's broadcast, week number 2, lesson number 5, continuing our study of the second chapter of Matthew's Gospel. A reminder as we get started. To learn more about IGH 260 and how you can get all of our free materials, including program downloads, digital books, online and correspondence courses, and more, please take a moment to do one or more of the following. Text the word IGH free to 55222. That's IGHFREE, all one word. Simply text IGH free to 55222, or send an email to free at ighradio.com. You can also call us toll-free at 1-855-IGH-6988. Let's get back into a study of God's Word today. At the very end of our last broadcast, we noted this. Matthew tells us that the Magi came into the house where Jesus was with Mary. They fell down and worshiped Jesus, then gave treasured gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. This was the goal of their journey. First, they wanted to find Jesus. Most of the account that we have read so far in Matthew 2 chronicles the trip that eventually brought them here. And second, they wanted to find Jesus to worship him. The journey did not fulfill their quest, but their worship of Jesus did. It's important to note that these Magi, not being Jews, more than likely did not grasp the full import of Old Testament texts that prophesied about the coming Messiah. Nothing tells us that they understood that the child Jesus was the Son of God, the one who would die to redeem lost souls. The language they used when they came to Jerusalem, that Jesus was the born King of the Jews, does not demand that they realized, that they recognized, and that they accepted his deity. Remember, the kings of Israel, David and Solomon specifically, were honored and respected by kings and queens outside the nation of Israel. At one time in their history, during the time of the Restoration, Israel's reputation for its great kings of the past prompted her enemies to shut down the rebuilding process of Jerusalem. Though no descendants of David reigned in Jerusalem after the time of Jeconiah, Israel's reputation of greatness, now past greatness, remained. But the possibility, or the threat, of insurrection, and thus the possibility of their return to greatness, lingered. In fact, a later resurrection against Rome that started around 68 AD would eventually lead to Jerusalem's destruction again. In light of this, it may be that the Magi's worship of the child Jesus was not much more than bowing or kneeling to pay homage or respect to a superior, such as a king. For example, the over-the-top indebted servant in Matthew 18 fell down before his master, not to worship him as deity, but rather as a sign of deference and respect. Given Matthew's overall design, to show that Jesus was the Messiah in fulfillment of First Testament prophecies, it appears consistent that religious worship is at least implied in every passage where the word appears. Matthew's overall objective, of course, was not only to demonstrate Jesus' messiahship, but also his divine sonship, that is, his deity. How much of that the Magi grasped cannot be definitively determined here. The last thing mentioned in Matthew 2:11 were the gifts that the Magi gave the child Jesus. The language indicates that their gifts were not for his parents, but for the child. Much has been made about the significance of each of the three gifts, but the overall thought appears to be this. They were gifts fit for a king. And that's the overall tenor of everything about the Magi. They sought a king. They found a king. They worshipped a king. They gave gifts to a king. Two thoughts here. First, Solomon, arguably, advanced the physical borders of the nation beyond that of Saul and David. His reputation for his wisdom, for the great building projects in the city, most notably the temple, generated praise and tributes from many Gentiles who came to visit him, most notably the Queen of Sheba. There are several key texts that show how, at key periods in its history, the nation of Israel was blessed by gifts, sometimes by request, that is, by asking, still reflecting generosity from the nations around them. The Egyptians, for example, gave gifts to Israel before they left captivity. Genesis 15:14, Exodus 3:17-22, among passages that reflect that. Solomon, as just noted, received many tributes and gifts from Gentiles. Prophets anticipated a future era when the Gentiles would give Israel gifts in abundance. For example, Psalm 72, starting in verse 10, and Isaiah chapter 60, starting in verse 1. Finally, the penultimate chapter of Revelation speaks of a time when the kings of the earth bring glory and honor to the new Jerusalem, Revelation chapter 21, verses 24 and following. The gifts of the Magi appear to be consistent with these examples. And then this. It has not actually taken place at this point in our study, but we will see it soon. The Magi are warned not to return to Herod, followed immediately afterward by Joseph's dream directing him to take Jesus and Mary to Egypt. The trip to Jerusalem and then to Bethlehem was followed by a different route home on the part of the Magi. And the initial trip to Bethlehem, due to the census directive given by Caesar Augustus, was followed by a different return home for Mary and Joseph and the child Jesus. Before returning to Nazareth, they went on an exodus, a reverse exodus of sorts, as they went into Egypt. Though they may have remained in Bethlehem for a period of up to 2 years, as we will learn in the following verses, they were now about to leave the land of Palestine and travel to a foreign land. How would they fend for themselves there? The gifts of the Magi, like the gifts given to the children of Israel fleeing Egypt, would have provided financial resources for the family's future needs in the land of Egypt. Two departures just mentioned appear in Matthew chapter 2, verse 12, and Matthew chapter 2, verse 13. First, the Magi departed for their own country. And second, Joseph, the young child, and his mother flee to Egypt. Both departures were divinely directed. Remember, we recently encourage you to count the times that God's divine hand shows up in Matthew's gospel. And yes, as we noted earlier, God's divine hand appears everywhere. The first divine direction. The Magi are warned in a dream not to return to Herod. And the second divine direction, an angel appears to Joseph in a dream telling him to go to Egypt. Both departures share some things in common. Herod's nasty character, triggered both. His words to the Magi, "Bring back word to me," now appears to be more of a threat than a command. And though Mary and Joseph never encountered Herod, as did the Magi, what Herod wanted from the wise man certainly affected Jesus' parents. If Herod's effort to find the born king of the Jews was thwarted, there would be consequences. The circumstances in this context demanded that both the Magi and Joseph's family return different ways. The Magi departed for their own country another way, and Joseph, Mary, and Jesus flee to Egypt. Their immediate problems were solved. The Magi escape Herod's wrath, and the child Jesus does not die. And finally, note that both the Magi and Joseph listen to and follow the directions given. Matthew's account of the Magi ends here, Matthew 2:12. But Matthew's gospel, a gospel centered on Jesus the Messiah, it was only getting started. The angel that told Joseph to flee to Egypt also told him to stay there until I bring you word. Why? Because, as the angel stated, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. The word destroy, used in Matthew 12:14, where we read, "Then the Pharisees went out and plotted against him, how they might destroy him." And then again in Matthew 27:20, where we read, "But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitudes that they should ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus." That word can be translated as perish, or lose, or ruined, terms that do not always indicate death. Here, in Matthew 2:13, as well as in Matthew 12:14 and 27:20 that we just cited, that's exactly what was meant. Herod sought to kill the young child Jesus. That's consistent with his slaughter of the innocents about to be mentioned by Matthew. God's divine hand, his divine protective hand, safeguards the future to be declared Messiah by directing his family to Egypt. Two key elements show God's protective hand. Joseph and Mary were directed to go to Egypt to escape Herod's wrath, but they were not just told to go to Egypt. They were also told to stay in Egypt until I, the angel in Joseph's dream, bring you word. There's an immediacy to the angel's message, an urgent message. It was not just direction, it was a command. The angel said first to arise. Second, the angel said take. That's imperative, a command. Third, the angel said flee. That's another imperative, another command. And fourth, the angel said stay. That's the third obligatory instruction given by the angel to Joseph. How long would this, the stay in Egypt, last? It would last until I bring you word. That language indicates that it would be until circumstances change. What circumstances would have to change? We will answer that question in our next broadcast as we continue our study of Matthew chapter 2. A reminder as we close, if you would like to receive our free 30-lesson series, Studies in the Bible, call this toll-free number 1-855-IGH-6988 in order to request them. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.